I think we just don't critique enough, like, in the culture, honestly.
That's a really good point, but have you considered that you should just let people enjoy things?
Don't yuck people's yum.
I think that apology videos, as a concept, I like them. The way that they are done, major flop.
Hey guys, welcome to Assumptions. I am Spencer, who's going to be hosting this episode, and this episode is about video essayists. So let's go around and introduce ourselves. First, we have Mina.
Hi, my name is Mina, and I do a lot of video essays on like fashion, media, culture, some light stuff.
I'm Harry. I make videos about whatever interests me at the time, usually video games or some like horrible political thing. But sometimes they're pretty good.
Hi, my name is D'Angelo. I make videos on the internet as well about whatever crosses my desk that day.
And today we're responding to assumptions that you have provided us with. So let's see what these people have to say about these. But before we get into the assumptions, I want to ask you guys just a general question. And that is, how do you choose a video for your video topic? It sounds like a lot of it's just what comes across your desk that morning.
It's usually, if this question has stuck out in my head long enough, then this is definitely worth talking about. Like, where did the Roblox oof come from is a question that I find myself re-asking every day, and there wasn't a good enough answer. So like, well, now I have to do work to find out what this is. So now I have to make a video about it to justify the time I'm about to waste on it.
You're like monetizing a legitimate question you have.
Yeah. I want to do a thing about Stockholm syndrome because I just personally think it might be fake. So but to do the research required to get a solid answer, it has to be a business expense, so.
That's a crazy thought, and I will be watching.
I think for me, I read a lot of magazines and newspapers. No, newspapers? Do they still call them newspapers if they're online?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Online newspapers?
Online news.
News tablet? Yeah.
News tablets? News laptop? Yeah, and I just, like, if I see, like, certain, like, common threads that are happening across, like, articles that I read, I naturally am like, oh, like, why is this all happening at one time? And then I end up, like, digging into it. And then if there's enough substance there, I make a video. So for a lot of it, I'm not getting monetized for the research that I'm doing, but hopefully something comes out of it.
I honestly am just online, and I try to keep that part of my process the same, because that was my initial impetus, was just things I saw that I thought would be interesting to talk about. And so now, even though I've changed my writing process, I've changed the way I maybe filter what is or is not a good topic, it always just starts with me browsing Google, like browsing just to see, like, what are my friends talking about? What article has popped up? Why are people talking about this? Kind of like what you're saying. And yeah, I think that's where most of my content comes from nowadays.
So guys, with that, we have our first assumption. And that is the assumption that video essayists are glorified drama YouTubers.
Who said that?
I didn't say, hey, I'm just reading.
I'm reading
what's written down for me.
Yeah, but by who? You?
By me. No, actually, I'll take a little credit for this. I have a lot of thoughts about this, and I want to hear y'all's thoughts about this.
I used to be very offended by the drama channel moniker, because in the back of my mind, I felt like I worked too hard. I had the chip on my shoulder, honestly, for the longest time. And I was like, no, it's not drama content. But one day I kind of realized what people call the content doesn't change how I felt creating it regardless. So you could say it's commentary, you could say it's drama. And then I kind of had to unpack, like, what was so offensive about the implication that it was drama in the first place? There's not really too much legitimacy, no matter what you call it. Or rather, I think drama has a lot of legitimacy. If you go all the way back to, like, gladiators fighting in rings, that was just drama. Maybe a little worse than things that happen online, but I think at the end of the day, it's all high drama, and I'm just honored to partake in it.
Because drama is such a nebulous term, we all maybe make drama videos of some kind. I've definitely had that leveled at me as well. But I look down on what I think of as a drama video, but of course, I don't think I make them. I think everyone maybe has that internal clock. And I kind of respect people who are like, no, I make drama videos. People who are just willing to own it without us, where we very pretentiously are like, who knows really? I'm like,
I don't think I get like the accusation of being a drama channel a lot. I do get people saying like, why doesn't she like anything?
Do people call you negative?
Call me negative. But like, the thing is like, my negative video, like more my negative skewed videos tend to do better algorithmically. So it's actually everyone else who loves negativity. Right. Because, like, I think if you look at my page, like, there are, like, some, like, pretty neutral stuff that's, like, sprinkled in, but they just don't get, like, peddled. They don't get peddled by YouTube's drama farm. I try to talk about things more holistically and not just, like, negative, negative, negative. But I think the issue is that, like, because I do want positive engagement, I end up, like, using thumbnail phrases or, like, titling it in a way that makes it seem like it's a pan of something.
Yeah.
When it's not fully, and I don't know. I dug my own grave with that one, so.
I've titled half of my videos, like, X is garbage and he is Y.
Yeah.
Even if I think the thing is, like, fine, just because that's, like, an attention-getting title, and then I have to walk it back immediately. I'm like, okay, like, it's
like, actually, I lied.
I lied, but it worked. You clicked on it.
I had to let go of all of my, like, sort of retention over negative content, and I was like, you know what? Either people are going to click into this video and they're not. And if I name the video, I have a neutral feeling about this topic, but I still think it's worth discussing. Or if I say, this is literally trash and it's a 45-minute video, which one would I click? And so I sort of realized, like, I have no idea why I'm so concerned about, like, these labels. This was, I had to work through all this years ago. And when I came back recently to YouTube, I was like, you know what? I'm just going to go with the maximum engagement. As long as it's an accurate representation of what people can expect to find in the video, I don't really care about, like, the title, the thumbnail.
Video essayists just turn on the camera and yap. They don't do any second takes.
I recorded the plagiarism video in one continuous 4-hour take with no edits.
Water?
No. that's why I sound so tired by the end. I'm sure that you all probably have to, like, record and re-record and edit things as you go.
I actually do, like, one take.
But you write it first, right?
No, but my videos are all... Yes, I do write it first. Like, I don't just, like, hop on and yap. I mean, actually, no. I do it in one take, but I edit the take. So, yeah. I have the video constantly recording.
I'll never forget the time I uploaded a 50-minute video. And then someone very dear to me reached out and they were like, oh, yeah, I'm thinking of doing the same thing. How long did it take you to make that 50-minute video? Like 4 hours? And I was like, I was like, okay, but part of this is because YouTubers kind of try to put out that illusion of effortlessness. Like, we're not really thinking about this. And no, we don't have scripts and we're looking at you, not a teleprompter. But honestly, it does take a lot of work to be able to sound like you're talking casually about something while maintaining any level of coherence. Because when I talk to my friends about the things in my videos, I sound like a lunatic. I sound like, hold on, wait. And then there's just, I look like the meme of that guy doing the Pepe Silva explanation.
I like how you said that guy and then one-to-one we're like Pepe Silva instead of being like Charlie Day.
This is how I sound. I don't even, proper nouns? No, pronouns only. And then once I get to a stage where I'm actually writing, I go back and I'm like, oh yeah, that guy, Charlie Day. And I make things make sense to somebody who has not been roped into my ranting at them for like 2 hours straight. And so it's both. I want to sound like I'm being casual, but it takes a lot of work to do it.
Now, how much do you guys stick to the script 100%? Or how much do you, will you be talking and then something kind of comes up and you're like, oh, you know, I should add that.
I have like a script that I fully write out, but then I can't be bothered to read it when I'm actually recording it. So I then like slowly start ad-libbing it until it's something else entirely. And like by the end, I'm like, oh, this is the thing I came up with on the spot that's really good. I remember once I had this like whole bit where I talk about like Ben Shapiro and how bad this idea is. And then like on the spot, I was like, I'm going to break a hole in my wall with an axe. I can just do that, right? No one's going to stop me. I just did it. And like, I couldn't have planned that. To an extent, a lot of like fully scripted material lacks that sort of authenticity. So I kind of almost wish I wrote things worse so that I had to like find it in the moment more than like, because if I was like, this is great, then I'm not gonna deviate from it too much. Luckily, everything I write is terrible, so.
Yeah, and that's like one of your most iconic moments.
Yeah, I was like, people like that? That was like, I was truly losing my mind in that moment. Like,
I feel like sometimes when you're just working on like writing something, like you get kind of lost in all like the writing conventions and other things. And then when you're actually saying it, it's like, wait, this is like an idea that has come organically through like what I'm saying. And it makes sense to add it in. Like sometimes I have to workshop it to like bring myself back to the script because I'm like, I had a transition there and now it no longer works.
So you write it to get it straight in your head. And then when you actually record, when you have to explain it to another person, you have to make it make sense in a different way.
Right.
I think also it just helps to remember that I am still talking to people. That's the hardest thing for me to remember when I'm looking at a camera for anywhere from 30 minutes to multiple hours. And so I think those improv moments help kind of reframe yourself where you're like, I'm not actually just reading words. I am talking to a person asynchronously.
I'm getting word of another assumption.
Oh, no.
How are these coming from?
How are they finding us?
A third assumption has hit the table. Yeah.
Only Americans get to make that joke. People do not consider video essayists a reliable source of information because they're on YouTube.
I think that's fair.
Yeah, you probably shouldn't be listening to any of us.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, like, YouTube has no, like, checks and balances. Like, there's no one fact-checking, like, who's part of the YouTube team or anything. And it's totally fair. I think that's like a side of media literacy to be questioning. Just because someone's saying something to you that it might not be true. I would never want anyone to be like repeating everything I say.
Do you guys ever watch videos and like kind of almost like fact check them in your head? Like, do you guys consume content that you kind of see through almost?
Yeah, that definitely happens where you see something. That didn't happen. That's a guess. I tried to check that once and that's definitely not what happened.
I don't think I watch a lot of serious like video essays. So I have no problem regurgitating misinformation to my friends.
That's a lot of fun though, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, I read somewhere and it's like, no, I watched a video. And
like how many video essayists do you think just get their information from other video essays?
Well, that to me is what a drama channel is. Yeah. Like, oh, this YouTuber has said this and I'm going to report that they've said this. Now I don't even need to have any facts to check because I'm just regurgitating this information. In the journalism space, if you tell a lie, there's consequences for that for your career and like there's often legal ones if you say the wrong thing about the wrong person. And on YouTube, you kind of have that if you're really high profile and you tell an obvious lie about someone who has a lot of money. But otherwise, you can kind of say whatever you want. I think as long as people are aware that that is the case, it's not too scary that people can just tell lies all the time. Mm-hmm. Like, I try to tell obvious lies on purpose now just to keep people on their toes. So, like, the character that I play in my videos, he's a helicopter pilot. I'm not, but he says he is. And I want people to feel like you can't trust what I say just because I act like I fact-checked it or whatever. Because I want people to be able to, like, think for themselves about it, especially because I know I could be wrong. Like, people make mistakes. You want people to be able to think about that.
Do you guys ever get asked to do, like, citations or anything like that? Like, in an academic sense? Like, you know, here are my sources.
I put them in. I don't get asked for them. I think because it also came from, like, writing academically where I'm like, I just feel like I need to. Sometimes I really just talk about, like, the stupidest things ever that have no consequence, like, if I say anything wrong. But I do want to encourage people to do their own learning. And so they're also there just for people to do extra reading, like if something that I say is interesting, for them to go and look through it.
When I went to school, like there was no documentation on how to cite a tweet or like how to cite an Instagram post. Yet, tweets and Instagram posts still contain information that could contribute to an academic space because if this is like an exploration of how people are acting on social media, et cetera. So I think like academia kind of I can understand where Sideways is coming from and that academia kind of tend to look down on things that happen on the internet. And yet, it can exist without it at this point because this is just the new way that we communicate. So no, not so many cited sources, but just because I don't know how to cite a tweet, really. An APA, MLA, how do I do it?
Have you ever got an email from someone asking if they can cite you?
Yes.
Yes.
And I've always said, please don't.
I'm like, I guess if your institution says it's okay. But we're not peer-reviewed over here.
Exactly.
It's easy to get bogged down in negativity when they're constantly critiquing things.
I do not believe that critique is inherently negative. I genuinely think, like, healthy media critique has always been part of, you know, the way we create content, interact with it. Genuinely, I remember back in school, like, there was so much of what we consider to be being terminally online just took place offline. Like, you can find Voltaire basically releasing diss track books about, like, dragging, you know, popular adventure novels from the time or things like that. And so, or, like, I remember I was reading through this Freud book, and he took a moment to say, yeah, I'm citing this as a source, but low-key it was trash because I hate the way it was written. This guy who just could not string together a logical sentence to save his life. And I was like, nothing has changed. Like, this isn't a new form of negativity. I think it's just we want to have have strong opinions. I would rather listen to somebody who has a really strong opinion about what they're talking about than someone who's just, I guess, endlessly extolling its virtues. I don't know.
Do you think you have to be a hater to be a video essayist?
No. Well, a hater's a strong word. Yeah. I think it's good to be critical. I mean, it's like, I totally agree. And it reminds me of Ratatouille. Because you know how, like, Anton Ego, the villain of Ratatouille, if anyone hasn't seen that masterpiece,
yes.
He is a critiquer, a critic. He's a critic, and it comes from a love of food. Like, yes. There's that one line where he's like, if I didn't love it, I wouldn't swallow or something. Yeah. And I think it's just like, wanting a medium to get better in any way. So, like, I think it's very interesting and fun. I went to an art conservatory, and we would get critiqued on our performances, like, for theater, like, constantly, and that was just how you got better. And it was done in such, like, a, you know, this is, like, no one's attacking you. Like, mm-hmm. We all just, like, want to be better. I think we just don't critique enough, like, in the culture, honestly.
That's a really good point, but have you considered that you should just let people enjoy things?
Don't yuck people's yum.
It's like that, like, meme of, like, holding the lips. Like, shh.
When people say that, it's like, yeah, but people love watching people be negative, so just let people enjoy this. Right.
Some people seem to think, like, multiple things cannot be true. Maybe something can be so cool to so many people, and yet someone else can have a totally different take on it. It's an easy trap to fall into as well, because it can kind of feel very personal. Because again, I say I want people to feel strongly about it. That leads to, I feel like, conflating, oh, by attacking this, you are actually attacking me. You don't like this, you must not like me, or I've made a wrong choice. And I think people should be more confident. Just be more confident and say, you know what? You, YouTuber, may have X amount of subscribers, but you're still wrong. I wish more people would tell me to my face, like, this is a well-made video, but at the end of the day, don't care, didn't ask.
Yeah, and like, okay, going to your, like, let people enjoy things, I actually find that, like, if I'm watching or reading something that's in disagreement with me about something I like, it reaffirms to me, like, how much I like it. Because I'm like, you're wrong. Like, I like it for these reasons. Yes. Like, these are why you're, and I don't know, it just makes me enjoy it even more.
Yeah. And there's the drama.
Yeah. Drama.
Hating has been a dominant part of human culture since the dawn of mankind 2,000 years ago. Yes. I was reading this great book by Dante, but called Inferno, have any of you heard of it?
And, what is that?
It's just a list of, like, the, you know, all the different circles of hell and all the specific people he knows who were alive at the time of writing and which hell they're going to. It's like, this is just a 100,000-year-old shitpost. Like, you can't, like, people would be calling that guy a hater now, but instead it's like the foundation of most of Catholics' beliefs.
It's like in the classic canon.
Our next assumption is it can be frustrating to compete with content farm channels.
Aren't content farm channels low-key trying to compete with us? Like, to have to hire an entire team of people to try to get out something that maybe starts to approach. But in a way, I can't lie, it's kind of flattering. I feel like it's two completely different bubbles that we're trying to reach. And I, in many ways, don't feel too threatened, because I feel like multiple things can be true at once, and just multiple types of videos can appeal to multiple kinds of people. In my heart, I don't want to believe that somebody who clicks into why Markiplier's career ended in 12 seconds with this one. I like to believe that's a different person then it's going to click into a 2.5-hour video about some influencer I made that no one knows
Speak
about.
Speak for yourself.
I like to believe that, like, content farm channels can reach the people I was never going to reach anyway, and I'll stay over here in my corner where I make one video every now and then and not, you know, 12 every hour.
I don't consider content farms competition. Sorry.
My algorithm knows I don't watch it, so I kind of forget they exist. But, you know, that, like, the internet is so big, and I feel like what I've learned over the years, too, is that, like, there's just so much fragmentation. Mm. And so, like, they're minding their own business. Like, unless they make content about me, I guess, like, I'm not really, like, aware of it. I don't know, again, like, as you were saying, how many people that watch me watch them. Like, right. I feel like it's just, we're coexisting.
Yeah.
I run a channel where we put out 3 videos a week. That's borderline content farm. And it's like, and I am so jealous that, like, some of y'all get to put out, like, one video every couple months. And to me, it's not a competition. It's just, it is a coexisting where it's like, you know, we're occupying 2 totally different spaces. And you're going to come to you guys for, like, these longer, you know, more in-depth, very personal things where something else, you know, a more, you know, regular upload is going to be more, you know, it's less, it's going to be less special, I think.
Right. Like, if you want to know your local farmers, we're them.
Exactly. And I'm John
but
Walmart.
But I understand a convenient buy. Yeah. Sometimes you just need a pack of Doritos.
Sometimes you just need to just watch a Smosh Games video. Our next assumption is that video essayists get all their information from Wikipedia.
When you can tell that someone has done that, it's really infuriating. There's a lot of essayists where, like, if you go on the Wikipedia page and you check the list of sources, then, oh, that's everything that they've read. That's very disappointing.
I think, for me, it can start on Wikipedia, but that's about it. I need some sort of jumping off point for my own research purposes, whether that happens to be a wiki page or just me going down someone's Twitter profile and being like, what is happening? But no, I don't think that Wikipedia captures the vibe, I think, of what people are looking for on YouTube, because they could just go to Wikipedia. Like, at the end of the day, if you just want an emotionless list of cold hard facts, which honestly Wikipedia is sometimes not that either. But no, there's not interesting enough things on there for me to only use it as a source.
Video essayists love writing essays in high school and got all A's in English.
I actually got a C on a presentation on Marie Antoinette, which I later made a video about because I said that she said, let them eat cake, and that was a lie. So I never liked writing essays in school because I had to do them.
I did get all A's in English. I won't sit here and lie. But it's just because it's just, you got me. I don't know what to say. I love writing about things. I love a beginning, a middle, and an end. I always tell the story, but when I was a kid, reading and writing were the main things my mom was like, listen, this will get you out of any situation. And I didn't even have it in access. She was like, I'll take you to the library. You can learn whatever you want to learn, and you can convince people of whatever you believe if you are open to reading and you know how to structure something logically.
You could start a cult.
Yeah, I was going to say, granted, she never should have shared this with me, a devious five-year-old, because but at the same time, I'm glad she did, because I still believe it. It's, again, one of those really childish beliefs I hold on to. I think if I can just explain this properly, I can get anybody to understand sort of where I'm coming from. And so I saw essay writing in school as just an exercise in honing that skill of, like, maybe I don't necessarily care about, you know, the economic ramifications of this obscure bill that I just heard about 5 minutes ago. But I can maybe formulate a point about it and then find sources and back it up, et cetera. So yeah, no, it was bad. And I'm glad that I get paid for it now, because sometimes I just write things for no reason and I don't even share. I can't monetize it. It's just a compulsion.
Video essayists try to cater to the BreadTube audience.
What is
BreadTube? Yeah, can we define BreadTube?
BreadTube, it's a reduction of essentially like a leftist YouTube audience.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was just kidding all those times I said racism was bad. I just said that so people would follow me.
Yeah, you're appealing to the woke.
I was just trying to appeal to that woke audience. No, I think the thing about political content, because that does pop up, but if anything has any sort of crossover with anything related to the LGBT community or like certain figures that maybe also dabble in politics, I've taken an approach of it doesn't matter because all of this is political, and none of it should be political. There shouldn't really be any political implications of me respecting someone's pronouns in a video. The fact that there are is genuinely not my problem. So any sort of term that people want to level against me is fine, because I'm not even thinking about that. I'm just trying to make good content and not contribute to the part of the internet that's making everyone's life worse.
I think when I first started, I made like a lot of disclaimers because people didn't know me yet and they like didn't know where I aligned, and it was really important for me to feel like I was creating a community of like-minded on specific important things. Like, you can disagree with me on like Bridgerton or whatever. But yeah, so I feel like, I don't know, I don't necessarily think I was ever like peddling talking points, but I'm sure I could probably cringe watching those back being like, I didn't need to make that disclaimer like a million times. But obviously like the stuff that I make, like there is like leftist stuff like that's just put in there because that's just how I think.
It's interesting when like fans construct a term for the people they're watching, because a lot of the criticisms they then level at that sort of group they made up is almost a criticism of them. Like when the term BreadTube was being invented, like I got involved in YouTube just to make my friends laugh. Like I didn't have a political project. But when I started making stuff that involved my political beliefs or whatever, people were like, I've put you in this group of people I like, and I've noticed that everyone in this group of people I watch are white people. It's like, this is a group you made. Yeah. Why would you make such poor choices of viewership and then get mad at me? I didn't make you do that. It is just tough when you're in a group that you don't have a say at what these other people are doing, but whatever they do, it now reflects on you and you had no say in that.
Oh, seriously though? Because this one YouTuber who you may never heard of makes similar videos to you and I didn't see you criticize them. So you're basically supporting them.
Like that.
Got that a lot. ChatGPT is going to replace all forms of essay content.
I hope not. Yeah. Those would be really bad essays.
Yeah. That would be, if people let that happen, I'm sorry, they deserve whatever they get. If you want to support that and then that's what's getting made, I will have checked out by that point.
Buckle up. ChatGPT is going to change the world.
Yeah, when can we expect the first fully ChatGPT written H-Bomber Guy video?
Well, it depends if it successfully emulates how long it takes to write.
Exactly.
Will it take like 6 hours to get back to me or will it just immediately start?
Would you think it was plagiarism if I put into ChatGPT, write me an essay in the voice of H-Bomber Guy?
I think it would show that it's never going to be the same as an actual person writing.
Yeah, it's because it will never be an actual person, which is one of the core. Like, one of the fundamental things about being a person is that you are one person. Whereas if you're trying to amalgamate all these ideas, you're not going to have a perspective anymore.
We will be in danger when ChatGPT can cut through a wall with an axe. Up until that point, I think we're fine.
But also what I think about is like, you know, going back to our negative content, like I do feel like people enjoy discoursing in the comments about it. And it would feel weird to me discoursing with an AI bot because like you're not going to change their mind. Like it's just,
you don't think ChatGPT can be a hater in the way that real people are?
No.
It doesn't have that real
worse.
Hate.
Yeah. They'd be saying crazy stuff. Like weren't there all those like AI chat bots that were like deprogrammed?
Yeah. They were racist.
Yes.
No, they went from zero to racist in like an hour.
It was so bad. And that kind of explains why ChatGPT is so nice and like quick to shy away. That really proves like if we have to put in this many fail safes so that something doesn't start literally promoting genocide, maybe it's not there yet.
Why can't we get AI to do things that we don't want to do, like folding laundry and taking out the trash?
Sure.
Like, why are they taking jobs that people actually like? Like,
instead
making
of
art?
Just pandering to the BreadTube, then.
They need to think bigger.
Yeah, like we could be using this technology to make life better instead of like, oh, what if we just take away more jobs from artists? That should fix it. I kind of like in a post-scarcity utopia. There would be this joy to like, I got a machine to talk like me. Isn't this fun? And we could just look at it. But because these robots are competing for jobs that people need to live, it's just horrible.
Now we have individually curated assumptions for each of you that, again, are coming from the ether. We don't know where these came from. This assumption is that it is impossible for Mina to just wear a casual outfit.
This is casual, actually. Like, this is just a shirt. A shirt and a hat. Okay, I have mixed feelings about that. Personally, because I actually do wear a lot of like casual stuff, like on my day to day. Like if I'm going to the grocery store, I'm not gonna like put on makeup. I also don't think it's good to wear makeup every day, like for me, or to even get dressed like well every day.
Naked,
weirdly enough, like even though my presentation is such a big part of my videos, I feel like making videos has given me a lot of confidence about what I can offer aside from how I dress and how I appear, because I'm not gonna lie, like I use like some costuming bits to like get people to click. Mm. If they're like, oh, she's wearing like a puffy sleeve shirt and her title's like, I hate puffy sleeves, like that works. But because like of the way people respond to like, most of my comments are just like on what I'm actually saying. Mm-hmm. And it's less about like what I'm wearing, and that has been really nice. So I'll dress up because it's like I want to, but I don't necessarily feel like in my day, like you can see me on the street and I'm looking like any other athleisure mom. So
Harry has dozens of unfinished scripts at any given moment.
Oh, yeah, like constantly. Like every video has gone through so many drafts at this point or has been in a box for years and years. Like the Deus Ex video, I tried to write and like had to start again once every 2 years. So like 6 years in, I finally got a finished video's version of a script. But I'm always working on like so many different things. And like,
Are you a Google Docs guy?
Yeah.
You used to have folders and folders in there?
Yeah, I used to have like Open Office or whatever, but it was I'd have to keep track of the files and then I would lose them. So thanks to the cloud, all my
thanks
documents
to the power
are easily
ChatGPT.
Stealable.
And then we have one for D'Angelo, which I feel like could apply for me now. D'Angelo had a huge Tumblr phase.
That is not correct. I just thought of the Vine for a second. No, it's true. I don't. What's the point of sitting here and trying to lie? I had so many. Because the issue is on Tumblr, you can have an infinite number of sub-Tumblrs. I had one for everything, honestly. Anything I was mildly interested in, which resulted in this really funny, just this anecdote where my father found my Tumblr account and he was like, I need to understand which of these posts you made and which of these you didn't, because some of these are on Hinge. And I was like, no, I'm mostly a reblogger. And it was a lot for me. But yeah.
I'm a reblogger, stop.
I reblogged it. I didn't write it, I swear. I put the marijuana into my mouth, but I didn't inhale or whatever. Yeah, no, Tumblr was not good for me, and that's why I was drawn to it. Similarly, one could argue YouTube and having the ability to have people validate my hyperfixations isn't good for me either, but here we are.
Do you guys have any assumptions about each other?
What?
I assumed you had hair and you were wearing a bald cap. I assumed you both were very intelligent.
And you were proven wrong.
No, and I genuinely believe you're intelligent people. This has been like a lot of fun, and it's a treat for sure.
Thank you. I guess I assumed similarly to the other person that like there's nothing but super hot fire in your closet, whereas you have nothing but burnt lab coats in your closet.
Super hot fire in a different way.
Exactly. The product of a super hot fire. Yeah.
It was a real stretch even dressing up for this. I have one nice pair of slacks, and I put the shirt on. I just washed it, so it was all crumpled up. And Lisa saw me coming out of a spare room because I'm staying there for this. And she was like, I'm going to iron that shirt. Before. So we were slightly almost late to this.
We got to have Mina style here. I would watch
you know
that
why?
Video.
I'm going to
have
you click in. Notes. Instantly.
I assumed you would all be way more intimidating. I think I have the sense that everyone else who does this knows more than me and just generally is more professional and like so much smarter that they'd see me and like, oh, it's this idiot, you know?
That's so interesting because you've been doing this for longer than both of us.
Exactly. I'm like, I'm baby.
It turns out when you're the youngest person in the room for 10 years, you become the oldest person. Yeah.
We have a fun segment to do. To wrap us up, we're going to do some on-the-spot essays. You guys will be given a topic, and you have to take a good or bad stance on them. You guys will have 60 seconds to argue your point.
You know, this is great for me because you'll see how I actually do put a lot of work in the scripting.
Let's go. You'll beat the allegations.
Our first topic, daylight savings time. What would your video intro be for this? Like, here's why I think daylight savings time is the worst thing since... I don't know.
Okay, I'm an anti-daylight savings person because I think it goes against the whole globalization of trying to interconnect our communities, because if any of you have friends who live in different countries, it completely messes up all your FaceTime interactions because of these daylight savings. I have like a lot of friends in Australia. Now I'm like 13 hours behind instead of 14. It completely messes everything up. It's just not... For a connected, friendship-laden world, we need to remove daylight savings.
That was really good. Chills.
Thank you.
As a flake, having an opportunity to give an excuse to turn up late to something or miss something because, oh, you know, that was this hour, the time zone changed, I'm so sorry. It's been great. Without that, I would be in trouble for a lot more of the things I've missed on purpose.
D'Angelo, what's your take?
Yeah, support me. Back me up.
Yeah, so I don't like it. In screen. I get so annoyed whenever it changes because I can never remember when it is. Now, one would think after having experienced what? 50 of these at this point, back and forth, back and forth. It wouldn't come as a total shock to my system, but it just throws off my vibe. And that might not work in an academic or legal sense, but I believe in vibes and the power of vibes. And please don't mess mine up because we have to change the clock again.
In her work, Psychoanalysis for Normal People, Geraldine Costa argues that the purpose of psychoanalysis is to prepare you for anything. And I think getting occasionally kicked in the face by daylight savings is an important test for all of us to overcome.
Have you considered the vibes?
No, yeah. Geraldine Costa failed to consider.
Our next topic, apology videos.
We should just all do an apology video on the spot.
That's camp. That would be my intro if I did an apology
video. Can we line up the chair? Do we have like a couch we can all sit on, like neutrally facing the camera?
I'll go first. I'm sorry that you guys were offended about the thing that I said when I was a different person. It doesn't really reflect me.
Which was only an hour ago.
Which was an hour ago. I was honestly just dealing with a lot in my personal life. It was daylight savings just happened. That's all I've got.
I have a real response. Okay. Not to flex, not to mog on you.
I feel like I'm being mogged right now, guys.
I think that apology videos as a concept, I like them. I like transparency and communication to audience. I also believe in like, what's the restorative justice? Mm-hmm. The way that they are done most of the time, for some reason, major flop.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's just this vibe of like, how do I make this not have happened, but without actually addressing that it did in fact happen?
Right.
It's like, oh yeah, people, there's so much negativity in me, the guy who like burns down buildings. People just, you know, can you, like, I'd love to apologize to all the people who I've killed, yeah. But that would mean admitting I did it. And I don't want you to think I did it. So I'm sorry to everyone who feels burned to death by my actions.
And then one final topic I'd like for y'all to discuss. Plagiarism.
Well, I have this 4.5 hour video I just watched. It wasn't very good. I didn't like the guy seemed a little off. The vibes were off.
The vibes were off.
I recorded it during daylight savings. I was so tired.
So true, bestie.
You ate.
Yeah. I aged.
And then do we want to...
like a fine wine. And much like wine tasting, you have to spit me out afterwards.
Okay.
Do you?
Sorry.